Welcome to the Inspire to Invest podcast, where we're sharing stories from real estate investors and how investing has changed their lives. This episode of the Inspire to Invest podcast has been brought to you by Plentitude, Inc.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Inspire to Invest podcast. I have Saif Al-Sahli here with me today. And for those of you who don't know him, he is a real estate investor, visionary, and master renovator behind the pilot episode, Tiny Homes Garage Edition. He's renovated more than 150 units since moving the new floor office to Hamilton 3 years ago. He's a self-proclaimed workaholic. And when he's not at the office, he's on the hunt for abandoned real estate to turn into luxurious rentals in great neighborhoods. Armed with boundless creativity and unwavering passion, he breathes new life into these abandoned properties and transforms them into awe-inspiring dream homes. So thank you so much for your time today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
So it sounds like you've obviously done a lot in the last few years, but maybe you can take us back to what life looked like before real estate came into the picture for you.
Before real estate came in the picture, what I used to do is I studied engineering. So I used to work in the larger projects, mining and metals. And then did that for a few years. And after that, I became a consultant doing mostly design work.
Okay. And then what was the catalyst then? Like, how did you make that jump over to real estate? I know, you know, changing industries is not always necessarily the easiest.
Yeah, it was a bit, obviously, everything is a bit of a risk. I had gotten to the point where I wanted to do a little bit more. I think the consulting side was a bit boring for me.
Yeah.
You do your 37 and a half hours a week, and then it's like there's so much free time. So I wanted to do a lot more. I wanted to be hands-on, more involved, like more stressful, feel more productive.
Yeah.
So I started venturing out and doing a bunch of stuff on the side. Yeah. One of them was I bought my first rental property that needed a little bit of work.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got involved with that and bought a second one, needed a lot more work.
Yeah.
And was really involved with that one. And I just loved it. It kept going from there.
Yeah. I find that an interesting parallel because I feel like a lot of people think, you know, they don't want the rat race. They don't want the grind of their jobs and their careers and stuff. They go into real estate investing because they want that freedom, but then they end up finding themselves probably working more than they would have if they stayed in their job. Obviously, you sacrifice in the short term to reap those benefits in the long term. But I just found that an interesting parallel with your approach that you wanted more work and you're kind of hungry for a bigger challenge. Now, I guess in terms of growing your portfolio, you obviously started with your first couple of rental properties. Mm. How did you shift to growing to the point of your portfolio now? And can you speak a little bit about what that looks like at this point?
Yes. So it's kind of one property at a time, right? So you do one and then at some point sooner or later you stop and then you think you're like, wow, you know, we've done quite a bit of work so far, but you really take it one property at a time. And then when you're just in the industry all the time, you keep your eyes and ears open and you find that you tend to get pretty lucky because if you're in the industry the entire time, odds are you're going to be there when the opportunities are there.
Yeah.
So you end up capitalizing on them.
So you're just typically going in and just buying and selling. You're not necessarily refinancing and growing the portfolio that way.
I've only sold one property ever. I always just refinance and hold on to it. But I believe more in like long-term value and buy and holds and refinance. So I always buy in A neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Kind of, I would say the worst home in the best neighborhood.
Yeah,
so that you can do some forced appreciation, fix it up, get quality tenants, and then you get rid of that deferred maintenance line item.
Yeah.
So that way, when you're coming in and you're putting in new tenants, you have very minimal maintenance for the next like 5 to 10 years if the place has already been fully gutted. So you reap the long-term rewards.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So what does your portfolio look like these days?
Right now, I have 11 units.
Yeah.
And they're all duplexes and triplexes and a few garden suites as well.
Nice. And can you speak? I know you've got your career with New Floor. So can you talk a little bit about that business and what you're doing with that?
So yeah, that New Floor, we're general contractors. We're based in Hamilton.
Yeah.
We do residential and commercial work. We do a big variety of projects. Some of the jobs are for homeowner end users that are looking to could be add a second story, a rear addition, got their home. Other projects we do are investment properties for investors, residential investors. And that's duplex conversions, triplex, garden suites, and apartment buildings.
Yeah.
And then we also have our commercial side as well, where this is more where businesses bring us on board, typically do a full retrofit or redesign of the space.
Yeah.
And then other jobs we have are government jobs where we're doing public tenders for the city.
Oh, nice. So it is pretty diverse, and you're specifically like Hamilton and more southwest Ontario.
The initially, yeah, the focus was only Hamilton, but
Yeah.
then since then we've grown. But naturally, we're in this area, so 80% of our business is in Hamilton.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So now you look back at your career in real estate. What would you say is probably your biggest success or something that you're most proud of?
I think it's that you focus on quality assets and building long-term real value, not, buying something quickly for a cheap price and then, doing a quick turnover, make X number of dollars in this short amount of time. I think when you build true value and do forced appreciation, you really make out on top in the long run.
And I think a lot of that obviously had to do with timing. Like, there are a lot of investors right now that are experiencing challenges because they brought properties high. They're planning to obviously burr them, sell higher, but then the market's going down and stuff like that. So I think obviously, like, in the last 10-ish years or even 15 years, a lot of investors have been on that trajectory up, but now we're experiencing a bit of a turnaround. So how do you think that will impact your strategy when it comes to real estate investing going forward?
Well, definitely, I bought quite a bit last year and the year before. So there's definitely losses there, but I wouldn't exactly say they're losses because they're losses today, but they're not something I'm looking to sell today anyway. So if you hold on for 10 years, 5 years from today, if needed, I could do a refinance and you're definitely on top, even if you average it out for those 5 or 10 years.
No, absolutely. Now, in terms of obstacles, what would you say are some of the obstacles that you've faced and had to overcome, as you've grown your portfolio and launched your business?
I would say probably the biggest question mark in gray area is the complexity of the work and the renovations. When to stop renovating, that's a little bit hard to control yourself because when you're building a quality asset that's long term, you really want to do things right. It's very hard to turn a blind eye and say, okay, let's not do this. Let's not do all this additional work on the subfloors before we put this brand new flooring because you're going to end up picking up the tab in a couple of years. So
No,
it's a
that
bit
makes
hard
sense.
to draw that line.
Now, have you engaged investors for any of your properties, or are you just doing this all pretty much on your own through your business?
Everything I've done is on my own.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, there's a lot of people that find that to be like a difficult concept to consider, but obviously a lot of investors start with nothing and then they just use investors' capital to be picking up properties or to do those renovations and stuff like that. So it's interesting just to hear what everybody's approach is and how it's different. Now, in terms of lessons, like, what would you say has been some of the lessons that you've learned? And if you could go back, is there anything that you would have done differently to maybe achieve a different outcome?
I would say if I were to do it differently at the very start, I would hire the right people for the right job and not be afraid to pay a bit of a premium. I'm not going to say a massive premium. You don't have to hire, a custom home builder to build your legal basement, but I would definitely hire the professionals at a bit of a premium because there's a lot you can learn from them that you don't just see on a line item. Sometimes I find this is always the case with entry-level investors. They're always like, okay, this is going to cost X amount in labor, and I definitely can't get someone to do it. Or then it can cost a handyman this, plus this is the list that I need from Home Depot. Now let me go pick it up. And when you do that, you kind of rob yourself because you don't get to build that quality team that could have taken you to the next level. So yes, you might be losing up to 10% on that first project in terms of construction costs, but if you think about it in 10 years, just put an Excel sheet, put your appreciation in there, look at the total numbers. That 10% of the construction costs on day one is really nothing. So I would say I would have tried to become less short-sighted on day one.
No, I can understand that. It's kind of like the quote when you talk about not necessarily paying for the job, you're paying for the years of experience and the person that, they might cost a little bit more, maybe they can do the job in half the time, and time is money. So it just depends on how you look at it. So that being said, we're just going to take a really brief break for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Inspired to Invest is proud to support the Beyond Success program. In today's complex world, it's absolutely crucial for our youth to learn how to take charge of their financial future. We believe that every young person deserves access to accurate, practical financial information. Designed to bridge the gap, the Beyond Success program leverages a comprehensive educational boot camp to equip young minds with essential financial literacy skills. At Beyond Success, it's not just about teaching financial literacy, it's also about fostering a foundation for a prosperous and empowered future. Join us. Together, we can build a brighter financial future for the next generations. Join us. Together we can build a brighter financial future for the next generations.
At Plenitude, it's the right time to invest in building wealth with purpose. With 8 projects in 5 cities, you can choose from 2 real estate income funds, 3 real estate development funds. We have an abundance of affordable, accessible, and age-in-place options. Sign up for a free strategy call with a member of our team.
Thanks again for following along with this episode of Inspired to Invest. In addition to real estate, investing, and running my own brand experience agency for 18 years, I also published a book called The Accidental Entrepreneur in October of 2021. This is my story, and it chronicles how I turned tragedy into triumph to embrace my destiny in entrepreneurship. If you're interested in picking up a copy, you can find the link at serenahomesrealtor.com, and you can also find my link tree with all of the retailers in the details below. Thanks again for your support. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Inspired to Invest podcast. I've got Saif Al-Sali here. He has a company called New 4 Construction based out of Hamilton. And he's also been investing in real estate for the last several years. So he's sharing his experiences with us. I guess one thing I want to know is, what's the craziest thing you'd say has happened to you so far as a business owner or as a real estate investor?
The craziest thing is we got so far ahead in a project. And then, you know, we were sending out invoices and invoice and invoice. And then one investor ran out of money. So we were out kind of a few hundred thousand dollars.
Yeah.
I would say that was probably one of the craziest things that's happened to me. And dealing with that has been a big challenge and a learning curve.
So how have you gone about dealing with that? Like, as a, not to say you're a small business, but like any business, like that is a big hit to absorb.
Yeah. So obviously I had to hire the right professionals to give me the best advice, because at the end of the day, the good thing about real estate is there's always guarantee against the asset itself. The asset is worth something. You know, you're not just doing something where you shipped some furniture over, some product or office supplies, and you don't really have an exact handle on something. So there's always a guarantee of the asset. But then managing that deficit for many years was a bit of a challenge as well.
Yeah. No, I can understand that completely. Now, when you look at things like advice and education, what would you say some of the best advice that you've ever received?
I would say it's the same thing in the sense of that I mentioned prior, which is hiring the right people for the right job, because you're just able to move better as a unit.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of the quality of the work, but also in terms of the speed.
Yeah.
When you're an entry-level investor, I find that a lot of people overlook the holding costs and the operating costs of the property.
Yeah.
And so they're okay to let the project potentially slide by 2-3 months to save $1,000 or $2,000, which is kind of backwards. You know, just because you don't see it in a direct cost, there's no real, you know, there's no real bragging that comes with, hey, I got it, the construction done for X amount. It's really, was this project a success or not? How quick did it get done?
Yeah.
And was everything predictable, on schedule or not? And then did you build a team out of, you know, after that project where you could take that exact same team and then replicate the project again or potentially do it even better?
Now, is there anything that you've added to your due diligence process to understand like who is the best fit for you? Because obviously, like what I found is that quotes can really, really widely vary. No, I need to speak to having renovated an office. And at the time, I think the landlord gave us a leasehold improvement budget of $35,000. So we kind of used that as our benchmark. And like one quote was 25, one was 38, and then one was like 60 for the same work. And we're like, well, why would this be that much different, right? So just trying to understand that based on your experience, like what are the things that you're looking for that are most important?
when comparing quotes, you're asking.
With quotes and just like evaluating who to work with and your team members.
I would say make sure when you're collecting quotes, don't go get, you know, there's a bit of a stigma in the industry. Go get three quotes. Yes, you need three quotes, but the very important part is you need three qualified quotes,
Yeah.
right? If you get a handyman to do an office rental, then he may not be familiar with certain building code requirements. And to him, that's excluded from the quote.
Yeah.
But if you bring a commercial contractor, they may know that, okay, if you're putting up a partition wall, there's associated costs to do with that. For
Yeah.
a handyman, he's just framing and drywalling two sides. For a commercial contractor, they're running electrical. They're probably adding a sprinkler head inside and then probably a duct as well. So
Yeah.
they know that. So you got to make sure that first off, all the quotes are qualified. So three qualified quotes. And then I would say once you get a few that are within a pretty reasonable cost of each other, make sure you visit their job sites. Don't just, you know, look at the place, look at the employees that are there. You know, are they coming in with smiles on their face? Are they moving quickly? Are they dragging their feet? Are they excited about being there? Because these things do make a difference. That translates to reliability. You see someone where everybody's all excited in the field and everybody's getting work done. Well, guess what's going to happen? When that person tells you they're going to be done next week, they're going to be done next week. The guys that are dragging their feet aren't. It's unpredictable.
No, I can understand that. Do you ever get client references as well, or do you see a value in that?
Yes, as in clients referring us.
Well, no,
absolutely.
Like when you're exploring a contractor or someone to work with, like, will you ask for references from their clients?
Well, we are the contractors, so we wouldn't really hire contractors. The only people
Well, I
we
mean,
do
like your
hire
team
is
members and stuff like that.
Okay, you're potentially subtrades. So if we're hiring subtrades, for example, we pay attention to things that are a lot more difficult. One, it's or a lot more different. Sorry, it's the personality and making sure that things are getting along. So we pay attention. Once we hit a certain price point, we don't care about hiring the cheapest subtrade. It's not about getting the cheapest. Is this person reliable? Are they going to show up on time? Let me see their job sites. Let me see what their actual crew size looks like. And then we have different criteria where we go through that.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Now, when you look at kind of your journey as a real estate investor, is there any particular number in mind that you look at as your financial freedom number? So whether that's cash flow, number of doors, like, is there something to you that you'll really feel like, you know, I've made it at this point?
I don't think so. I think it's always changing because it's like you set a number and then you hit it and then you want more because I find that driven people are always going after the sense of purpose. It's not, there's no number. After a certain number, you're not going to say, you know what, I've found my sense of purpose. You're always going to want to do more. And it's kind of the gift and the curse. It's what makes you work a lot. But at the same time, it also makes you never satisfied. So I don't think there's no, I do have a current number, but I'm sure once I hit that, then it's going to go even higher as well.
Yeah. I find it interesting just to hear what people say, because in some instances it's like 1,000 doors or a value of 50 million or whatever that is, right? So everyone has their own approach to things. So I always just find that really interesting. Now, how would you say real estate investing and being a business owner has changed your life in terms of opportunities and just lifestyle and things like that?
Yeah, well, it's obviously the flexibility is nice. You don't work less hours, but you're more flexible in terms of the hours.
Yeah.
If, you know, if I don't have the absolutely crucial meetings tomorrow, I could say, okay, I'm not coming in and I'm taking a flight and going somewhere warm for the weekend.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice. But with that comes an enormous burden. So your personality has to be able to handle all that stuff.
Yeah.
If you're naturally a more timid person, for example, you don't like confrontation, things like that, that may not be the best route for you because you're just going to have a hard time. But if your personality lines up with something like that, where all those things come natural, then being a business owner or an entrepreneur is a great path for you.
Yeah. I think one of the challenges that any business owner will face is that you're not necessarily off. You know, when I had my own business for 18 years, like, I can't think of any vacations where I wasn't still checking my emails. Like, you still have to pay people. You know, we didn't have a system set up where it just completely ran itself. So even when we had a bookkeeper, you still have to like hit the submit button to approve payroll and like send money, and you'll still kind of field certain things. Or if there's an issue, obviously it escalates to you as a business owner, right? So sometimes you can think that your day is going to go a certain way and things come up, right? So at the end of the day, you're always going to be responsible for it. But again, it is that blessing and that curse. So you've got the flexibility and the freedom, but you're never just off. Like when my employees went on vacation, like, they're off, like their phones are off. You're not talking to them whatsoever, right? So I think it's just understanding the pros that come along with the cons.
Yeah, that is true. When you're, people always think that the, you know, being a business owner, you'll have a bit more flexible of a schedule. You can do all this stuff now, but you don't. You work so much more, and especially you work when other people get to rest, and you can't even, and even when you're resting, I would say 90% of the time, your mind's not even turned off. So are you really resting?
I saw like a meme on that recently, and it's like most people and they're sleeping, and it's like an entrepreneur, and there's like a bubble of all the things going
Yeah.
through their head when they're laying on their pillow at night, right?
You
So
know what? Last night I fell asleep. I thought I got a pretty good night's sleep, but then when I woke up in the morning, I realized I was dreaming. We have to hand over a building tomorrow, so it's end of this week. It's we're coming with the project, and I was in my dream thinking of deficiencies. Okay, what if this comes up and what if that comes up? I'm not kidding. You know, I didn't even think at the time that this was something weird. But then now that we're talking about it, it's like I don't think, you
No, I'm
know,
the same
a person
way.
that has a business, you know, would be dreaming about things like that.
No, I'm the same way. I mean, it's not like I would keep my phone on at night because it would just never stop going off. But I remember even we had an event, and we provided staffing all across the country. And at the time we had an event going on in Vancouver. And I think I checked my phone just to see the time at 2 in the morning. And I saw someone canceling for a 6 a.m. shift in Vancouver. And I was like, well, if I leave this to the morning, I probably won't get a hold of anyone because it's going to be so early. But if I message some people right now, it's 11 o'clock at night there, I'll probably be able to fill it. So I'm literally like squinting at 2 in the morning, and I got it covered, sent them the stuff, and went back to sleep. But it's like stuff like that. Like, I wouldn't say that happens all the time, but when there's things going on, like you always have to just be attuned to like the things that can come up just so that you can deliver to your clients and you can meet and exceed their expectations.
Yeah, you're right. And even as a real estate investor, that's an entrepreneur as well. Dealing with a tenant's a full-time job. It's like
Expect
having a
the
kid.
unexpected.
Yes.
So in terms of your favorite quotes, obviously the name of this podcast is Inspired to Invest. So what would you say is your favorite quote that motivates and inspires you?
I mean, I have one in my wallet. Look, I have one that I carry in my wallet, so it's right here.
Nice.
So it's a bit long, but it says nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. So basically, be persistent and be determined because that counts more than anything.
And you just, when challenges happen, you just gotta keep going.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Is there anything else that you wanted to leave with the audience at all?
You know, I think we covered a good amount. I mean, if the audience is looking to sort of get into real estate now, we're at the end of 2023. It looks like we've kind of hit the peak in terms of where the interest rates are. And I would say if anyone's entering the market, now would be an absolute fantastic time because it looks like 2024, rates wise, is going to stay fairly stable, if not slightly go down. So it's like we're kind of at the end of the last stop, you know what I mean? And 2024, it looks like things might start sort of recovering. Whether that recovery takes a year or 2 years, I don't exactly know. But
Yeah,
if
it could take
someone's
a
thinking
while,
of,
but I feel
you're
like
right.
there's a mentor I had that said, when everyone's on pause or run away, he's like, I'm going over and I'm going shopping. So you just got to look at things a certain way, and you can never completely time the market. So you just have to do what works for you, but also identify the hidden opportunities, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Great. So thank you for being here today. If anyone wants to get in touch, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
We're really active on Instagram, so you could just look us up, Newfor Inc., NEWFOREINC. And you can also go to our website, newfor.com.
Great. So we'll include that in the show notes below. And of course, thank you for being here. For anyone that is watching and tuning in, please make sure that you follow along at Inspired to Invest Podcast on social. And for anyone watching on YouTube, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe below. And of course, above all else, make sure that you remember when you invest in yourself, the sky's the limit. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you to Plenitude Inc. for bringing you this episode of Inspired to Invest. The views represented on this podcast are for general information only and does not constitute investment or other professional advice or an offering of securities. The host and guests featured on Inspired to Invest make no representations as to the performance of any particular investment. Should you decide to make an investment, you are responsible for conducting your own review and analysis. It is recommended that you obtain independent legal, accounting, and tax advice from licensed professionals.